All right, welcome to American Experiment Podcast. We are on location at the state capitol. Specifically, we are in the Senate office building. Even more specifically, we are in the office of Senator Zach Duckworth of Lakeville, who's going to be one of our guests today. On my left and is our economist, John Phelan, our senior emeritus economist, we call you that. We should give you a title like senior emeritus economist. But so today we're going to, we're here because, just as a reminder, our podcast studio in our office building in Golden Valley was burned down by an arsonist. We have no update on the arson fire. The FBI is working on it, we're told, and hopefully we'll get some answers and some accountability. But in the meantime, we can take the show on the road, as they say. So we are here at the Capitol talking about the Uber-Lyft issue. And I think let's go back to the beginning. I mean, even maybe back to the beginning when Uber and Lyft came into the market. And I we were talking earlier about the kind of the free market idea that Uber and Lyft come in, and the cab drivers complained. And I thought it was hysterical. The cab drivers all complained that Uber and Lyft have an advantage over them because they're so highly regulated by government. And so the answer is not to loosen regulations on government. The answer is to somehow limit Uber and Lyft. That's how they came into the market. That didn't work. But that's kind of where we're at today. And it all started really with the legislation last year, right, in the 2023 yeah. session. So maybe, Zach, you can walk us through where that started.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So like you mentioned, Bill, you know, Uber comes into a marketplace. They're a little bit of a disruptor, but they're able to do that because they offer convenience, they're efficient, they're low cost, and they meet a very critical demand for a service that people would like. And last year, the first time I heard of this bill, I was sitting in the Commerce Committee here in the Senate, and we had folks come up and share that there were some issues regarding wages, how much they were being paid. Of course, everybody's pointing the finger at Uber and Lyft and demanding that they pay more to drivers, etc. So we tried to hear them out. The bill certainly had not been negotiated to a compromise where drivers and the companies felt that there was a good, happy medium. Ultimately, the House and the Senate passed versions of the bill very late in session last year. It went to the governor. He ultimately vetoed it. It's the only bill the governor has vetoed.
In his 6 years.
Yeah. And here's the deal. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed, aside from the ordinance that Minneapolis recently passed. So if we thought the bill was harmful enough to veto less than a year ago, why would we now today still think it's an okay thing to do? And that's currently where things stand and why we think, if Minneapolis can't find a way to bring about a solution that keep Uber and Lyft here to serve the people of Minnesota that need that service, then the state at some point has to consider stepping up and saying, hey, we're not going to allow these companies to leave. We're not going to allow some of the income they allow drivers to earn to go away. We're not going to allow the service that folks with disabilities utilize on a day-to-day basis, that the elderly use to get to medical appointments, just evaporate overnight. That's not the responsible thing.
We'll get to that later in the solution, maybe. But mm-hmm. from an economic standpoint, a government, in this case a state and now a city, telling a company, a worldwide company, here's specifically how you need to operate in our market. That doesn't work, right? I mean, it's nonsensical.
It's crazy. I mean, if these people are so good at running businesses, why are they on the council and not running businesses?
Yeah.
And I think if you look at the makeup of government at the city and the state level, one of the problems that you have is that there are too few people with experience of the for-profit private sector. There's an awful lot of people with experience of nothing other than, you know, the kind of non-profit sector. Hands up, you know, I work for a non-profit now. But I think, you know, when you've got that kind of mindset, you sit there and you think about spending money. You don't necessarily think about generating a good or a service that people are willing to give you money for willingly. In return for that. So I think that's where a lot of this comes from.
Well, and the other relationship is the driver relationship. There's give and take there. They're not employees, they're independent contractors for a reason. There's benefits and drawbacks to that. And this, they're trying to use minimum wage laws to get at this when they're not even employees subject to a minimum wage.
Well, this is one of the interesting things, you know. So there's research on this. You know, this has been a very lively subject of empirical economic research the last 10 years or so. And one thing that you see from the research is that most people who are drivers for Uber or Lyft, it's actually Uber's the kind of sole focus of the research, but I imagine it's all the same for Lyft. But most of the people who drive for these companies are people who have a second job, or they have a primary job, mm-hmm. or they had another job until like the week before. So this has always been conceived of as a side hustle. Nobody ever put these jobs out there, put these businesses out there thinking, this is how you're going to afford a house in the suburbs. This is how you're going to put your kids through college. This has always been a side hustle. And it's also worth noting that the elements of remuneration from a job aren't just in the wage. They also come from flexibility.
Right.
So, for example, you could take if you're offered a job that pays you $15 an hour, but gives you no flexibility in terms of time, or a job that offers you $10 an hour, but essentially allows you to work when you want to work, then they're not, you know, you might choose this in certain circumstances, mm-hmm. you know, so it to look at just the pay is to miss an awful lot of the remuneration, an awful lot of the good that these companies do.
If I can jump in too, I think, you know, when we look at governing or regulating the private sector, for example, generally we're looking at, you know, safety concerns, making sure that everything's above board, people aren't at risk or aren't necessarily being taken advantage of or being treated fairly. Very rarely does the government ever step into, and I would argue it's really not their job to step into and say, hey, for these particular businesses and business model, you have to pay these drivers X. And that's what, you know, is kind of a little bit of an overstep, let alone for a city to do that. And we're seeing the impact and the second and third order effects of it. And it also ignores the fact that, you know, drivers have the ability to opt in or opt out. And so if for some reason this isn't meeting their need, whether it's a pay issue, whether it's a flexibility issue, what have you, well, then perhaps it's not the gig for them, and they can look elsewhere for – that may be a harsh take on it, but that's the reality of the situation.
You're exactly right. I mean, if these jobs aren't paying living wages, then why are people taking them? Mm-hmm. How are these people surviving, mm-hmm. you know, if they're not paying living wages? And I think it's an interesting – I often see things tweeted like, you know, if you don't like an abortion, don't get one. Well, if you don't like a job that pays this amount of money, don't get one. Mm-hmm. No one's making you work there. You know, apply the principle generally. Mm-hmm. One point I would make is that this is just one manifestation of a broader problem, which is the occupational licensing mm-hmm. thing. You know, so you go back to the point about the taxi drivers saying we're, you know, regulated up the wazoo, you know, so we need to kind of keep these other businesses out. It's exactly the same whether you're talking about, you know, cosmetologists or, you know, anybody like that.
Well, right. This every year there's a group down here at the Capitol coming saying, please license us, please restrict our ability, because it fences everybody else out.
It's
it makes,
a protectionist
it makes
thing.
That now you can't be a CPA, for instance, unless you get an undergrad degree and two more years, you know, make us a professional class so that we can charge more, essentially.
And again, there is empirical research that shows that these kind of occupational licensing laws, they don't benefit consumers in the terms of, you know, better quality. Well, the only people they benefit are the people who are already supplying the good or the service in question.
You just don't understand. We can protect you at government. You don't know what you need, John. You know, the safety, you know, financial security, you know, protection from fraud. That's government's job. We're going to protect you on another level. Well, yeah. Let's talk about characters. Sure. There's the players in this debate. Omar Fattah, Senator Omar Fattah from Minneapolis, led the charge on the floor of the Senate to get this bill passed. Mm-hmm. And when it passed, he was kind of a group of, I assume, Uber drivers were very excited and carried him out almost on his shoulders mm-hmm. in a parade as it left. And then the governor vetoed the bill. I'm sure he's very disappointed. Then they said, we're going to set up a task force mm-hmm. or one of these groups that the Capitol is famous for. We're going to work on the issue all year and then come back with better legislation. Yeah. He kind of refused to participate in that. He was certainly appointed to it because mm-hmm. he was the lead. But do you know what's going on there with him? Because it's kind of been interesting on the outside to watch. You know, he's the leader on it, but then he doesn't really participate, yeah. and then we shift to Minneapolis.
Well, I think there's been some behind-the-scenes angst regarding the bill in general, and quite frankly, I was surprised that it passed both the House and the Senate last year. I think there are some Democrats who begrudgingly voted for it just to move it, with maybe the understanding the governor was going to veto it. Mm-hmm. And it exemplifies a larger problem, right? Minneapolis knew this report recommendation from this group was going to come out, but they decided to pass their ordinance before it anyway.
Like days before,
yeah, which
right?
is nonsensical.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there's this group was created. Senator Fattah, it's my understanding, didn't really participate in it regarding his bill and the whole reason behind it to figure out a solution. But really, I think it exemplifies the entire process in general, and you can apply this to a lot of issues up here, which is unless you have folks willing to participate in good faith and be a part of the conversation, actually seek a solution that's beneficial to everybody, then we're not going to get anywhere. Then the more we're going to get left with is the government overregulating and causing all of these jobs that we're worried about protecting to simply go away entirely. What are all these drivers going to do if and when Uber and Lyft pull out?
Yeah, so let's get to that. So the legislature does, Governor vetoes the bill, this task force works on solutions, but then Minneapolis moved recently, last few weeks, to essentially, I can't remember what their legislation was, or create a minimum wage or make Uber and Lyft subject to their minimum wage under the threat from Uber and Lyft that they're gonna leave. And so just specifically, Uber threatens May 1st, and I believe them. I think people need to believe them. Mm-hmm. They're going to leave the market, not just Minneapolis. They're going to basically leave the Twin Cities market on May 1st. Lyft is a little different. They'll say, we'll try to work in the Twin Cities, but we're not going to go into Minneapolis. I'm not sure exactly how that'll work, but maybe they can say, well, where's the ride go? Well, sorry, we don't go there, you know, because if we drive in there, we'll be subject to this minimum wage thing. We're not going to do it. By the way, we don't even have time to talk about the accounting nightmares of this for a worldwide company. Oh, by the way, in Minneapolis, you have to do this accounting. That's nuts. So that's on the table now. I don't know if people realize. Like, talk about Dakota County. You represent Dakota County in the legislature. They've got a great program, I think, for getting rides to people who can't drive but have a job. We can get them to the job. And it's been an extremely expensive endeavor for government to do this over the years, dial a ride and all the different programs. Dakota County has figured out how to use Lyft, I think, to do that in a very inexpensive way, saving the taxpayers money and getting that dignity for those people to get to work and keep a job. That's all in jeopardy now, right? Yeah. If Uber and Lyft leave.
Yeah. So I'll touch on that, but I want to make a couple comments about what you said before, Bill, which is, you know, nobody wants to seem like they are caving into a business, you know, threatening that they're going to leave the state or whatnot. But the reality is they're already taking action that signifies they plan to do that. I can't remember if it was Uber or Lyft, but one of them has already begun shutting down a brick and mortar essentially office they had here for drivers to come and ask questions or work on things. They are winding down operations as we speak. I do not believe it is an empty threat. What's also been disappointing is the almost flippant or dismissive attitude toward this, specifically from folks on the Minneapolis City Council. That is the most irresponsible thing you can do when you're in the position of trying to govern, whether it's for a city or a state, just to flippantly be dismissive of something like this. That's the wrong approach. Specific to Dakota County, they were one of the pioneering, you know, government entities to look at rideshare and say, can we partner with these companies to provide a service to those with disabilities, to get them to work, to appointments, the same with elderly. And it has been, and this is the words from our friends with disabilities straight from their mouths, it has been life-changing. To be able to get this basically on demand, convenient, efficient, much more affordable. And they've been using it for years very effectively and to, you know, essentially roll our eyes at these folks and the service they're getting and say, if it goes away, it goes away.
It's so be it. Casualty. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's the least responsible approach that is not working on behalf of the people that we're supposed to be representing.
It's a, just to kind of ratchet things up a little bit, I remember a quote from George Orwell. Somebody once said to him, you know, about all these kind of catastrophes that there had been under various socialist and communist governments, and people would say, well, you can't make an omelette without breaking a few eggs. And Orwell said, well, fair enough, but where's the omelette?
Right.
You know, and a couple of things I'd like to say about some of this is, you know, so firstly, are Uber and Lyft actually going to make good on this and pull out? I hear people say, oh, they're just bluffing, they won't do it. You know, I was told they were bluffing before, but apparently this time they really are bluffing. But the difficulty with that, and it feeds into something that you do have in this state, and I say this as a bit of an outsider, a kind of babbitry or boosterism. I mean, there's a lot to be proud of in this state, but there's also a lot of problems here as well. And the idea that this is such a kind of honeypot of revenue and cash and goodies that these companies won't leave, I think people are kidding themselves. And secondly, I think it's also true that government, to a very large extent, consists of the art of, you know, the government whacks you around the kneecaps with a baseball bat, gives you a Band-Aid that you paid for, and then says, oh, be grateful and vote for me. And so what you see in Minneapolis now is this crazy idea that they're going to fill the vacuum they have created. By the way, they'll say, oh, by the way, you know, The private sector can't provide this. We need to provide it. The private sector was providing it. The reason it can't provide it now is because you nuked it. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, let's and get so to that.
Just to go back to this. You know, this idea that they're going to have a government-run rideshare service. The people who brought you Minlars and the DMV. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what that would be
so
like?
So this is solution one: is government-run. We'll just take it over.
They're going to throw $150,000 at this. Can you imagine? Yeah. You know, you roll out of a bar or restaurant somewhere in Minneapolis in the middle of the night, and you phone up this government rideshare thing. Yeah. And you spend maybe 2 hours on hold getting bounced from one person to another. And then eventually you get told that your ride will pick you up from Forest Lake in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
when he's done delivering the mail, he'll get to your ride.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So one thing to consider when we talk about these companies and whether or not they're going to stay or they're going to go is this. I'm a small business owner, and you know, we're always looking at our business model. And we're trying to forecast into the future to see what's the health and the longevity and sustainability of that business model. I can tell you this, as a business owner, if I was Uber or I was Lyft and I knew that the state of our business here or our business model was going to perpetually be in a state of uncertainty and we're always going to constantly have to be revisiting it or it's going to be under threat, at some point as a business, we're going to make the determination it actually makes more sense for us just to simply pull out and go elsewhere.
That's what these guys don't understand. There's a hassle factor. Yeah. I mean, it's like just the accounting alone, if you were going to try to comply with this ordinance, the hassle factor of that, you're going to have to create systems just for Minneapolis. No one's going to do that because forget it. We got plenty of other cities we can make money in. We're out.
Well, they want to use the soundbite of Silicon tech companies in California. You'd rather support them or back them than blah blah blah. That's not the case. What we want to do is provide the most affordable, efficient, convenient service possible for folks, and the government is not going to be the one to do that. They can't even get the light rail right. That's not on time. Yeah. That's not safe. That's costing billions more than we ever thought it was going to be. So you honestly think the government's the right person to stand up a rideshare program and somehow make it work here in the state of Minnesota? You've lost your mind. And oh, by the way, standing up another government program, agency, or department should never be the answer.
No.
Especially when we're talking about a service provided by the private sector.
And working. All right, so solution one is government comes in and takes it over. solution two is a bill you've introduced.
Well, but solution one actually really is Minneapolis reverses their course on the ordinance.
That would be great. And they actually are talking about it. And at American Experiment, we are running a little minor mini campaign of our supporters in Minneapolis to email their council members and tell them, hey, try again. Go back to the drawing board and fix this. All right, you're right. That's solution one. Solution two is legislature appropriates money and somehow tries to create fill the void. You have another solution, legislatively, looking at the district you represent, looking at the state, the whole metropolitan area, and the people of Minneapolis, and that is to just say, the state tells cities like this, I can't remember your bill, you call them rideshare companies.
Yeah, rideshare companies.
So we don't use Uber and Lyft by name. But
you said you can't pass an ordinance to regulate them.
Can't regulate
them. Well, the other thing, Bill, too, that I think that gets lost in somebody that we haven't talked about is the governor.
Yeah, leadership?
Leadership. I mean, I remember back in the Pawlenty days, specific to Ford, he was trying to meet with anybody and everybody he could at that company because he understood the jobs, the manufacturing, the economic impact, the local jobs was vital to Minnesota. Governors don't spend their time watching businesses leave their states. They spend their time trying to attract and grow as many businesses as they possibly can in their state because it's good for everybody. This should be a chance for Governor Walz to call together a group of folks and say, let's get serious about a solution. There's too much uncertainty and fear in the minds of Minnesotans. Let's actually do something about it.
You're absolutely right. We've forgotten that sometimes with this guy because he doesn't lead. But he could absolutely come in with the weight of his office and bring people together and get Uber would take the meeting. Yeah.
Nobody has the bully pulpit like the governor,
and
to be utilizing that right now would be absolutely critical. And it could be in a way that is fair and balanced. It doesn't have to be favoring one side or the other. But to your point, the bill that I've offered in the Senate that Representative Ingen has offered in the House is a bill that basically tries to preempt the city of Minneapolis from passing, or any other city, from passing an ordinance like they have. And that's not to say that I think that is the sole solution, but in my mind, what it allows us to do, if we were to pass it sooner rather than later, is to just push pause. Let's stop the ordinance from going into effect that's going to drive these companies out, it's going to remove this service from Minnesotans, and give more time for a conversation to be had. so that all the parties can continue those conversations and come to some sort of hopeful solution. Would I prefer the government just to stay out of it? Yes, but I also am pragmatic about trying to find a way for them to stay.
So pragmatic here, philosophical here. So from the philosophy standpoint, this preemption idea comes up a lot in government. You wrote this week, even though you may have sympathy for Uber and Lyft and the situation for riders and drivers, preemption is not the answer.
My argument here is that, you know, the people who've done this to Minneapolis were elected by the people of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And if the people of Minneapolis, you know, want better politicians, if they want better policy, they need to vote for it. They need to stop voting for these ideological nitwits. And until they do that, things won't get better for them. The people have a right to be wrong, I believe. And if you look at the situation like this, Minneapolis, the people in Minneapolis and, you know, the Twin Cities generally won't start to vote more sensibly until they feel the consequences of their actions. So if state government comes in and bails them out and kind of, you know, softens the blow, then they continue to vote for, you know, people who push these terrible ideas, they kind of cushion from it, and so they don't react. And so I think that's a concern. There's also an issue, you know, if you look at the question of preemption, you know, and this is a practical concern. So if you look at something like school boards, for example, local school boards have in this state a reasonable degree of autonomy from the kind of central educational authority, which when you look at some of the things like the new social studies standards, I am enormously grateful for. And I would hate the idea, and this is a practical concern, that at some point in the not too distant future, the state government could step in and preempt school boards and say, okay, you don't want, you know, these wacky books in your schools, we're going to preempt you. We're going to use the preemption precedent, and we're going to preempt you, and we're going to decide what your kids get. So I think that's a concern. And if I want to go even further, you know, to put my kind of philosophical hat back on for a second, and a practical concern as well, if you look at the state minimum wage, state minimum wage is, you know, what it is. In the Twin Cities, it's higher. We've had this push for preemption before regarding the Twin Cities minimum wages. And in defending those minimum wages, I remember Governor Mark Dayton said that people in the localities know better what suits those localities than somebody somewhere else. And if you think to yourself, if you follow that principle through, well, fair enough. In that case, the people in Willow River, the people in Bemidji, the people in, you know, Kilkenny, Minnesota, these people know their areas better than the central government does. So why don't we push this anti-preemption even further and get rid of the state minimum wage? You know, because anybody who's opposed to that measure kind of has to follow the logic through. But I do think there are practical concerns. It's not just a kind of, you know, egg-headed policy thing here. A point I made just before we started talking is that all these crazy policies will come back. They're not around this year because it's election year and people are trying to keep their heads down. But every crazy policy you hear will come back when if the political circumstances are favorable down the line. So all this, when I talk about preempting school boards, I don't think that's not crazy. That could happen.
So it is happening.
You've been a school board chair before you were a state senator. So, I mean, what say you in terms of, you know, you're on both sides of this a little bit in your experience?
Well, what I'll say is, so you make very good points, and something I say from time to time is, well, everybody's against mandates until there's one they like, right? Nobody's in favor of preemption until they are, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody supports local control until they don't in one particular area. And I'll give you a couple of examples. My personal philosophy on it in terms of governing is it should be a measure of last resort, right? In this case, would I have introduced a bill to preempt the city of Minneapolis, for example, from doing this had we not had the current situation? The answer is of course not, right? Because I believe in cities having the local authority to govern themselves in conversation with their communities and the people that they serve. However, I do believe it is the role of the state to sometimes analyze whether or not something is going to be so harmful beyond just a particular city, maybe regionally or the entire state, where we as a state have to determine, do we need to step in and correct or prevent something from happening? From a school board standpoint, I fight that battle every day on the Senate Education Policy Committee. And I'll give you a couple of examples that are interesting when you apply preemption to them. Rent control. We know that's extremely harmful. Mm-hmm. I was on the Housing Committee when St. Paul passed their version of rent control, and when Minneapolis said, hey, that's maybe something we don't want to do. And we had a conversation. We knew we couldn't pass it, but there was probably a lot of support for folks saying we want to outlaw, we want to preempt cities from being able to impose rent control because we know how harmful it is and we know how bad it can be. There's a similar conversation that could be had right now regarding a particular housing bill.
Yep.
Where that bill, which has apparently support from maybe some folks from both parties, would preempt or have a little bit of interesting interaction with local control and how cities plan and zone. So whether or not you are for preemption or not philosophically is interesting when you apply it to specific policies and things that are impacting the state or communities. I wish I could just be one position regardless of the issue, but I think the reality is, as I have been up here governing, is you find yourself different positions based on the issue and how it's impacting folks or a local community.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I mean, when you say minimum wage, when you say rent control, at least me philosophically, I'm saying I'm kind of with John. Let Minneapolis make those mistakes. Let St. Paul make those mistakes.
Well, let me touch on that.
This is a little different though, because if Uber leaves, then I live in White Bear Lake. I'm not going to be able to get a ride to the airport.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's affecting me because these idiots in Minneapolis are chasing Uber literally out the state. So maybe it's a little different.
I don't want to get I don't mean to offer this as an extreme example.
It's all about me, right?
It is, but think about not that long ago. When we had civil unrest happening in the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we were all calling on the governor to spin up the state and intervene. Right? There are instances in which it is so harmful.
He threw the mayor under the bus and said, hey, the mayor's got to ask in triplicate, you know, with his form that I need.
Exactly.
Then I'll intervene.
Right. And that's just a basic leadership kind of. Are we going to lead as a legislature, and is the executive going to lead here in Minnesota and stop something bad from happening? Or are we going to put our hands in the air and say, well, it's Minneapolis? And I'll say that because oftentimes when we're here in the legislature and we're talking about bad bills or legislation that has had a terrible impact on local communities. I'll use our school districts as an example. Our school districts right now are being financially decimated.
With mandates.
Yep. After what was sold as the most historic investment in education, we've got teachers that can't get contracts negotiated regarding their pay because districts are millions of dollars in the hole in deficit. And you know, we're having conversations up here saying, how do we fix that? And one school of thought is, we don't. Let them own it so that it hopefully influences their voting. I could only hope and pray that that would happen. Yeah. But in the meantime, morally, I'm torn between, do we allow that to play out or do we try to step in and make some fixes and changes for the better while we can?
Yeah. Final word?
One point about that is I see the argument about negative externalities in a kind of economic sense, which is that if you've got, so let's say, you know, if I've got a house and I paint it and keep the garden looking nice, people like walking past the house, that's a positive externality. If I'm playing, you know, the Who Live at Leeds at, you know, 900 decibels or something in the middle of the night, that's a negative externality. And so then the government could step in and say, you've got to turn that down, noise ordinances, things like that. So what we have to do then is we have to show that there is a negative externality. And the thing is, once you start to show a negative externality, I completely agree, you know, the effects of this measure won't be contained to Minneapolis. So Uber, I think, is pulling out across the Twin Cities metro. And even if you don't live in the metro, but you travel in and out of it, it's going to be a problem for you. But the difficulty there is once you start to find these externalities and say, well, because of this, the central government could come in, you basically will find externalities anywhere. And I think you have to be really wary of the fact that any argument you make can be picked up and used by the other side. Any policy you
next
put
week.
In front
yeah.
can be picked up and used by the other side. So you've got to be really, really wary of setting these kinds of precedents, I think.
I don't think it could be any more right. And that comes down to you know, hoping and praying that the folks in office have the kind of character that only intervene if and when it's deemed necessary. I think obviously we've seen that's not necessarily the case at times.
Yeah.
But that's really what it should come down to.
Leadership.
Yeah.
Well, just to make one final point, if you look at the vote last year, you know, on the statewide measure, There were certain people in the state capitol, in the legislature, who said some of the bills are a bit extreme. Mm-hmm. Specifically Judy Seeberger, for example, the DFL rep, she said these bills are too extreme. She ended up voting for every single
yeah.
one of them.
Yeah.
You know, real profile and courage that was.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to be remembered. You can't rely on these people to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Your bill has a chance, you think, in getting a hearing? I mean, yeah. a lot of your bills probably don't get hearings in the yeah. current environment down here.
I think as we get closer and closer to the deadline that Uber and Lyft have kind of put out there publicly, you know, we'll see action. But there's one thing that I know for a fact, and this goes back to the school resource officer issue. They're not going to let Republicans be a part of yeah. Any meaningful conversation or solution. They may just take our ideas and you know, sell them as their own, but they are not genuine about having us be a part of the process, despite our willingness to do so in good faith.
Well, if you do get a hearing, John is available to come down and testify. Probably testify against your bill, but you know, we are available to do that.
So. Good, and after he testifies, I could say, I wish I hadn't come to this.
Yeah, exactly. So, great conversation. Thanks, Senator, for hosting us in your office today.
My pleasure.
Until we get our new podcast up and running here in a few weeks. And that's the latest edition of American Experiment Podcast.